Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 60. This week's guest, we have Mr. Holga coming back in, Mark, who is Mr. Snaps, and we are talking a little bit about some cameras that they're made, some more about the Dallas Photo Walks, some accounts that we like, and a little bit about trying to get closer with your panel photography. And I'd like to say Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. We hope you have a great day. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 60. And this week, as you can tell, because you can't smell the salt, Andrew's not with us again. But this week we have two guests that have been on the show before. Mark. Hey Mark, how are you doing?
Good, how are you guys?
Good. Mark was with us at the very beginning of the show. You're the first or second person, I think, maybe that we had interviewed. But he came back to talk to us. And we have Michael, or Mr. Holga, as we know him.
Hello, howdy, Michael. Y'all.
How are you today?
Quite well. Thank you, sir.
Awesome. So, yeah, so we are back. Come full circle almost. Mark, how have you been? You've been keeping up with doing some pinhole stuff?
Trying where I can. Texas weather has not been cooperative. So, right. But I've shot some. We did a pinhole photo walk a few weeks ago. That was a lot of fun. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Mark? I mean, Mark. Michael, how are you?
I do get some people who actually call me Mark, and it's like, how did you get Mark out of Michael?
I don't know. Me too. I'm sorry.
I'm doing well. You know, I'm sorry. What?
No, I was going to say, have you been getting the same horrible Texas weather as Mark? Or?
Well, we're just down the street from each other, so we share the weather. Right. Yeah, I mean, Mark and I, you know, if thanks to Twitter or I guess social media is the reason why you know each other. So,
right,
it was one of those we were in the same neighborhood. We were following each other accounts, and I think one day we said, "Hey, let's have lunch." And soon after that, we made Dallas Photo Walk. So,
sweet. That's pretty cool.
Been having a good time. And, of course, the rule is, unless, of course, I'm mistaken on this, Mark, the rule is if the two of us can show up, it's an official photo walk, and it's good enough.
Pretty much. That's all it takes.
So if anybody else joins in, it's like a bonus for them because we're going to go shooting anyways.
And to make the photo walks even more desirable, you guys are going to be offering photo walk insurance, right?
Absolutely.
Rain or shine insurance?
Yeah, which two did we lose last year, Mark? We lost, was it a fall photo walk and a spring one?
We lost the Plano Balloon Festival.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Is that the big hot air balloons?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, as a matter of fact, the Plano Balloon Festival itself lost the entire weekend. They didn't even have an event.
What a great place to be able to do a pinhole photo walk. Man, that would have been great.
I got us 12 all-access passes for the launch.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that coming around again? I mean, is that like a yearly thing?
Yes. We need to reach out to them again.
Wow, that would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they were happy to give us some passes so we could actually get out there and, you know, take pictures of the balloons as they launched.
Yeah. What time do they – is it like an all-day – launch, or do they just say, okay, everybody at 4 o'clock, let go of your ropes, and everybody just takes off, you know? Or like,
normally it's an early morning and an evening launch. So early morning, you're looking at like, you know, set, you know, just as soon as the light comes up, 7 o'clock in the morning,
right?
They start before then, like 6:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. That, you know, they're bringing out the balloons and lighting them up, which is really great because, you know, when they're throwing the fire in them, they're just they look like light bulbs at that point because they're all glowing up.
That would be a cool picture to just do a pinhole picture of the balloons starting out flat on the ground and just, you know, like slowly blowing up.
Man, definitely.
That would be great.
That one was a painful one to cancel.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. What and was the you other know, one? There's a follow-up one to that one. As a matter of fact, we have two balloon festivals like within weeks of each other. And the other one, which was our backup, was also canceled due to rain. So it was just, it was not a good 2018, unless, of course, you enjoyed the rain.
And it seemed to only rain on the weekend.
Of course.
Yeah, every time.
It was like perfectly sunny during the week.
It was a great 2018 if you were a duck, I guess. You loved the sun.
Absolutely.
Duck or frog, right? Wow. So then you guys, you could have gotten as close to the balloons as you wanted with full access, right? I mean.
Yeah.
Man. That's great. I would love to do that.
Mm-hmm. It was painful throwing those in the trash.
Right. I bet.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what. So then let's do this. One of the things I wanted to talk about this show was getting closer. So how do you guys feel about, do you feel like you should be getting closer, or are you, you know, feeling the breeze off of the chainsaw as it's spinning? You know what I mean? Like, do you already get that uncomfortably close to your subjects, or are you still kind of in the middle of figuring out, you know, like, your focal length for your pinhole and, or, you know, whatnot?
Yeah, I'm not Justin Quinnell close at all. You know, he's taking pictures that are like just right up against his teeth, isn't he?
Yeah, in his mouth.
or he'll take a picture of his hand and it really only looks like it has three fingers because it's just so, so close.
Right.
I'm not quite that close, but I was considering doing some close-up details of like my Volkswagens in my garage. And, you know, I was going to see about doing some point blank type stuff to see what kind of results I get.
Yeah. That's what I like doing. I like doing the point blank, like uncomfortably close to things. I know one of the, do you guys know Neil Piper?
Mm-hmm. I have to follow him on Instagram.
Yeah.
He, on the back of his camera, he has a sticker that says get closer, you know, so, he's always reminding himself, but yeah, I do. I love getting uncomfortably close. But Mark, what about you? Are you are you still standoffish or?
No, I get hygienically close. I mean, it's I'm not at anybody's mouth, but
no, right.
I've taken some really pretty close up shots. I mean, I think that's the big advantage of having such a wide field of view.
Sure.
And so that's a draw for me with pinhole, is I don't have to worry about focusing and I can just get right up on there.
Yeah.
So I've done that, did that during our pinhole walk. there was some stuff on the ground and I put the pinhole box right up to it.
Yeah. And the other thing I think that works, the other thing that works really good with pinhole is getting close. The second part of that is, you know, filling the frame with your subject, because all too often, especially with pinhole anyways, you'll completely lose your subject. You know, it'll be that, it'd be really far away, you know, that big landscape with the little thing in the middle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, yeah, I think it's important to do so. Yeah. What else you guys think about getting close? Oh, the reciprocity.
Oh, crap. There we go.
Take a drink.
Take a drink.
I got to go into the room and get the rum now, but I'm down to three here. So come on, guys.
Do you either of you guys have any particular pinhole photographer that you like, that you're following, that gets that close, besides Justin, of course? But no, not really.
I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. I think most of the ones that I follow on Instagram, you know, or Twitter, like, just have generally good composition where they're filling the frame, but it's not necessarily something where they have to be right up on it.
Right.
So,
well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
How does your style of photography translate into your size of your pinhole camera that you like? You know, I mean, are you a normal, you know, focal length? I hate to use focal length because, you know, but I mean, do you like a wider box camera, or do you like the really the thinner ones that have ultra mega wide, you know?
Yeah, I'm not a super, I mean, I like the super wide kind of stuff, but it like for I have an 8x10 that I, right. I took a picture of actually three people. We have like three security guards at work, and I took a picture of them thinking I was going to get pretty close to them. But what I ended up getting was that they were really teeny tiny, and like the city behind them was huge, which, you know, that could be the effect you're looking for, but it just seemed like it was like too wide for what I was wanting. So it's like I might need something with a less angle of view. But gotcha. Yeah, either that or I have to get a whole lot closer than I was in the first place. So, I mean, I do like for my subject to fill the image and not be distracted. Now, if I'm taking a landscape picture, obviously I want as much landscape as I can get, and that's great. But when it comes to landscapes and pinholes, you can take a really big landscape picture, and then when you end up shrinking it down and, you know, like a digital form and putting it online, it looks just as sharp as everybody else's picture. And it's like, well, what was the point of taking a pinhole at that point? It's like it looks sharp. So
yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I don't get it. Well, I guess pretty much everything is a landscape in pinhole, technically. I guess, you know, I don't do much of the traditional, what you would call landscape with, you know, lens photography, but I don't really have, you know, well, because you guys have the what do you call those hills again with the flat tops, the mountains that have been like cut off? You said something, you called them,
yeah, the mesas.
The mesas, yeah. I mean, like, you know, you guys have those out there. Do you ever get out there and check those out, like sunsets or, you know?
Well, those are quite a bit. That's a several hours to the west still from us. So those are the only mountainish type stuff that we really have in Texas. So
yeah.
You have to really want to go find those.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like a travel, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's, what is it? It's about 5 hours away is like Canyon, Texas, where one of my younglings went to college. Yeah, it's about out there where you have to you actually start going up in elevation on the mesas, and then of course you're in New Mexico after a little while, and you keep going north in New Mexico, and you're going to end up hitting the Colorado Rockies. Right. So that's when real hills start happening.
Sure, not there, but rattlesnakes and cactuses.
Oh yeah, we got those though.
Right.
Yeah, I had some. I was just down in Galveston, and there's this lovely. I don't know, vegetation area that separated the beach house that we were at from the beach itself. And there was like these little bridges, not very high, but just enough to get you over the vegetation. And at the end of every one of the bridges says, beware rattlesnakes. It's like, I didn't know there were beach rattlesnakes.
That's crazy. Yeah, we have rattlesnakes out here too, but the ones we have, they call them pygmy rattlesnakes, and they're really small. And they're really bad because they're super tiny, you know. They're not like the big ones that you see, and you can hear them. You can barely hear them, I guess, but they're out here. So, yeah, you got to watch out. Watch your toes.
You know, but for getting close, I'm taking a look at your original mark, Three-Eyed Monster, his stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of keeps going in and out, which is kind of nice. You know, he gets close to some things. He gets far away from other things. So, you know, I think I'm in his boat of when, you know, when it really suits the picture, it's really great.
Sure.
I mean, I think when you and I go out, Michael, and we go shooting, and if we take our pinhole cameras, those aren't the only cameras we have.
And, that is true.
And so subjectively, if it's something that doesn't really suit pinhole, you can't get that close, it just would look better with a traditional camera, I think we're more apt to just, you know, pull out a 35 millimeter camera or something like that.
You both still use digital and do regular digital photography too, right?
I try to save digital for family stuff, and sometimes we do occasional like paid headshots, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, but I try not to shoot my digital very much for kind of more, I tend to just want to do black and white film. And so when Michael and I go out, you know, I'm more apt to take like a 35 millimeter black and white, and then a, you know, and a pinhole camera or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, dude. And I don't take a digital very when we go shooting. I don't take a digital very often, but whenever I do the Dallas Zoo quite a bit, so I go out there and I will take a pinhole with me. But more than likely, I'm probably going to shoot my digital DSLR. So because you know there's so many throwaway shots, you're just trying to get a good angle, right. And it's not something I want to waste film on. But when I do the when I take a pinhole camera with me, which I did this last time, it's, you know, it's nice to find those little nooks and crannies of the zoo that will fit with a pinhole image. And they're there. You just have to look for them and find out what you want.
You should always have a pinhole camera with you. are you and Mark, are you and Michael into doing 35 millimeter? Do you guys use 35 millimeter for your pinhole stuff at all?
I've only done it, when I've converted my Ondu to shooting kind of the sprocketless.
I haven't done any 35 millimeter pinhole.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly the Ondu.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I do the 120 because, you know, when it comes to building cameras and things like that, you know, the backing paper and the numbers and all that kind of stuff, it really makes it easier to keep track of where you're at. And
yeah, that's because if not, then you got to come up with some kind of clicking system, count the clicks.
Yeah,
with the 35 millimeter, I could see that'd be very frustrating. I wouldn't even begin to even attempt to do it. Yeah, I know. I was talking about a few shows ago when we did the me and Andrew did the little contest, and I beat him. But I shot a roll of that of the Ilford SFX in my reality. I mean, not my reality, my zero image, because I put an infrared filter inside of it. And, so I went online and read about how many turns you should do for it, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll do a turn and a half, you know. That should be enough to do it. And so I had this 36 exposure roll, and I developed it, and I had, like, 7 pictures on it. It was, like, 5 inches in between each picture. I was like, wow, that was like, wow, gross. I really, really messed up on it.
Oh, way overestimated.
Oh, way over, man. Yeah, because you know how long a 36 exposure roll of 35 millimeter film is, like 5 feet long. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it's humongous. You know, so like I had like 7 pictures on it. You know, 7 or 8 pictures on it. So I was like, nope, this isn't for me. I'm over it. I'm out. So.
Well, Mark, don't you have a Sprocket rocket or not?
Oh, I want to order one.
Oh, you do. Well, so in case you guys, it's got a very crude winding system. You can wind it forward and backwards,
mm-hmm.
but what they only do is give you every other number. And so you have to be smart enough to realize that you have to stop at the little dot in between. And so my first roll, essentially every other film, every other negative was like blank because I just skipped right over it.
Well, now what's, is that the lamography camera that you...
Yeah, it's a Lomo film.
Does a full 360 or something?
No, it does the sprockets, though. It takes a wide picture, and it includes the sprockets up to the very teeniest part of the edge. But you can wind it forward and backwards, so for double exposures and different things like that.
Wow.
But, like I said, the little winder mechanism where the number is.
Mechicism?
Yeah, mechicism. I haven't even started drinking it.
All right. Reciprocity. Take a break.
Correct. So I haven't even it's got so you'll have number one, then there as you're winding there'll be a dot, and then it'll say number three, and you're thinking, now I'm thinking from the old Holga experience, it's like, okay, well, this is like a wider picture, should I be skipping every other picture? And essentially, no, that wasn't the answer. You really should stop at each one of the stops.
Right. I gotcha. Yeah, I don't have I haven't used one of those before. I'm not an outrageous fan of lamography, but that's just me.
I'm not either, because a lot of their cameras are super expensive. But that one camera is a really nice little camera. Yeah, I mean, cool. it's essentially a really nice Holga. It does a little bit more for you.
Sure.
Awesome. And I know how much you love Holgas.
I do love a good Holga. Uh-huh. Sometimes. No. I tell you what, I bought a the Lomo. One of the LCA 120s. And that, I don't know, that camera's, I like my Holga better, actually.
Is that the one that's ultra wide?
Yeah, it's pretty wide. It's like a,
yeah.
Yeah, it's for medium format. I can't remember. It's 20, 28 or something. I can't remember what it was, but it's really wide. But if I had to do it over again, I probably would just either buy a whole bunch of film with that money and keep the Holga I have, or buy a new Holga and buy a whole bunch of film, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost like if they had only changed just a few simple things on it, you know, just a few things would make it totally worth the price that it is now, you know. But it's almost like they purposely engineered it to be cheap and frustrating, you know, which I guess is their motto. I don't know, but.
Sounds like Lomography.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, there's just a few things they could have done that I think should have been included in the price, you know. But, you know, I don't know. So that's my take on it. It is a fun camera. It takes good pictures, you know, but it's kind of the same thing as the Holga is, as far as, like, the zone focusing, you know. And it has a variable aperture, so you don't ever know what it is. If it's bright outside, you know that it's going to be, it's stepping down, you know. And if it's nice and dark, then it's opening up, you know. So you don't ever know where your depth of field is, because you don't know precisely where you're focusing, you know.
Hmm.
So it's really hit or miss. I mean, like, I feel like I got more of a keeper rate with the Holga than I did with that camera, you know.
Absolutely. I think, you know, because I got into Holgas for my Kennedy project, and I think that was one of the things that actually led me to pinhole photography. It's like, I couldn't ever guarantee you I was going to get a picture turn out.
Right.
But I could if I actually took a pinhole shot, because at that point I know the distance and the time, and I can do all the measurements and do the calculation triangle and all that kind of good stuff. And then I could guarantee it's like, oh, well, I know I'm going to get a shot. I mean, obviously it's not going to be super sharp as a lens. Right. But I know I'm going to walk away with a picture that looks like it was going to look like. And this is before I even getting crazy with you know, trying to get super close or super far, or trying to get weird angles on stuff. So,
yeah, definitely. That's frustrating on that side of it for that. But oh well, you know. So where do you see yourselves moving forward with pinhole? I mean, is there anything you want to try, or are you guys just happy still, you know, doing the, because you both pretty much shoot 4x5 though, don't you?
Yeah, I shoot I made some 4x5s. Mark's shot some 4x5s. I'm just building some prototype cameras on, you know, trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger and to see what I can or cannot do with these. So
right.
I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel as far as the photography itself is concerned, but I'm just trying to make a camera that does something that not many people can do or are willing to go for that size or something like that, because that's where I think it's like, well, anybody can get a DSLR and they can shoot a picture nowadays, and they all think they're photographers, but I'm trying to go the other route and trying to make the cameras themselves, trying to make a big original image, something that somebody else can't just create or Photoshop.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I can see that. Me too. I like that side of it. And I feel like kind of like the DSLRs have kind of pushed me to that, you know? Because it just, I don't know. I just like that, the hand that creates, you know?
Yeah. Mark, what did you think about the 4x5 cameras?
You know, I don't know which episode it was, but Corey, you were talking about wanting to get away from the 120 roll film and kind of head mm-hmm. out with just boxes, and then you just take one shot, and kind of feeling that lack of, you know, pressure to finish the roll. And since then, I've been kind of looking at different 4x5 options. I've got a 10 camera that I use. I really like that. And we made the 4x5s, and I actually ordered a laser drilled pinhole. And so I'm going to cut out the pinhole I have in there and put the new one in. And some, I think one of the things I want to do is get into more 4x5
yeah.
Film. and not the necessarily the direct positive, but actually shooting, you know, film.
Sure. I like the, I like shooting the Ilford Ortho Plus that Kath Cartman told me about it, because you can handle it under, you know, a safe light.
Mm-hmm.
You can load it into the 4x5 holders and develop it. You don't have to try and use the load it onto the little inserts for the developing tanks, you know what I mean? Or you can still do all that, but you can do it under a light, you know. It makes it so much more relaxing without having to use the tent, you know what I mean? The big bag. And
so it's an orthochromatic?
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good film. I really like it. And since it's not sensitive to red, it will make your greens darker.
Hmm.
You know, it changes your colors, the tone of your colors a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I enjoy using it.
Is it like the opposite of infrared?
Yeah, I think so. It is.
Yeah, I mean, instead of having a snowy forest, it's going to be a really dark forest.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Instead of it, you know, completely cutting it out and showing it as not reflecting it, it's absorbing it, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Hmm.
But yeah, it makes greens are a little bit darker, and the same with blues, I think. I don't know. Whenever I shoot pinhole, I try to wait for dark, gloomy, sad days. I don't like blue skies in my happy pinhole pictures, you know. I like to be nice and sad and dark and brooding, you know.
That was 2018 in Texas. It was sad and glooming.
Which is kind of ironic, because, you know, here where I'm at, where I live at, I, you know, it's like sun every day, you know. As soon as the sun comes up, it's like blistering till the sun goes down. It's like I can't even go outside and shoot during the day, you know. It's so bright. You know, so, but yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, so, Mark, you said you made a 10 camera? What do you mean by a 10?
I didn't. I forget her name, but she's in the Facebook group, and she offered up a bunch of her cameras.
Oh, that was Diane Peterson.
Diane Peterson, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she sent me one out of a T10.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I shot it at the pinhole walk, and it was quite sharp. I mean, I was really surprised.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was really sharp. I put the paper in curved, and
mm-hmm.
it's still, everything was really interesting, really crisp. And what? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, did she make that pinhole, or was it loaded with someone else's?
No, she made the pinhole.
Yeah, I think she makes all of her pinholes, yeah.
Yeah. And she had so many, I think she wanted to give some of them away.
She had a whole army of them.
Well, you know, when you start collecting empty tins after a while, people start using the hoarder term around you.
Yeah.
It's right. Like, I don't know. Why are you saving all these? I have a coworker who drinks, he does a lot of the tea from the tins. And every time he's done with one, I'm like, yeah, what are you going to do with that tin? Are you just going to throw it away? If you're going to throw it away, I've got a use for it.
Give it to him.
Funny story about that tin that she sent me.
Uh-huh.
She uses a magnet to cover the pinhole.
Uh-huh.
And on the magnet, there was a yellow paperclip. And I was like, what is the paperclip for? I had no idea. So I took a picture of it and I said, what do you do with this? And she's like, oh my God, I was wondering where that paperclip went.
Diane's awesome.
That's so funny. But yeah, it's a Tazo. I don't know how you say it.
Yeah, Tazo.
Mm-hmm. And then she spray painted the inside, and she, you know, put in a pinhole. It's a F200. And even though I curved the paper, it just looked fantastic. So I'm going to be definitely shooting some film in that one.
Yeah. So how does Mark, your wife, Laura,
mm-hmm.
She does a podcast too, a film photography podcast.
That's right.
How does she get along with pinhole? Does she not like the the no lens side, you know, like the no lens and there's no technical, you know what I mean? Like focal distance and, you know, whatever. I mean, is she into it or not?
Wait, not. Hold on a second. First of all, I have to get into trouble. Mark, Mrs. Yeah. Snaps shoots film?
Yes.
I'm sorry. She hates it when I call her Mrs. Snaps.
Oh. Yeah.
She is not into pinhole, not into toy cameras at all.
Really?
So she, that's cool. Yeah, she loves film photography. And
yeah, totally.
She's into mostly the rangefinder cameras now. But no, nice. Nope, has no, not a lick of interest.
Not a lick of interest, yeah. No. Well, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's kind of like, like anything else, either you're into it or you're not into it. I hate to say that, but I don't know. I guess it's one of those things that you just have to kind of work towards and discover it whenever, you know, it happens. You know what I mean?
I think, you know, she's, I think, going for like crispness and sharpness,
sure.
You know, and I get that. But I kind of like fuzzy as well.
And unless Leica makes a pinhole camera, and I'm not just talking an adapter, an actual pinhole camera, she's not going to shoot it.
No. Maybe contacts. Horrible.
Maybe a contacts pinhole.
Yeah. A Leica pinhole or a Hasselblad pinhole, you know, just the full kit. That's what it has to be.
Right.
I've seen pictures on both of your Instagram pages. Is your daughter into it? Because I know your daughter's into doing photography and using and shooting with, you know, 35 millimeter and trying out film and messing around with that. Has she tried to do the pinhole side, or is she just kind of?
So she came to our pinhole photo walk, and I put down her camera and meter to see, and I said, okay, that's going to be 9 minutes. And I think that's when I lost her.
What?
Yeah. She was like, and then she pulled out her Sony A7 and.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. That's cool. Yeah. No, she prefers film, but I think actually what she really prefers is manually focusing.
Yeah.
So, which is pretty awesome. So even on her Sony, she'd rather, you know, we put an adapter on there for her and she's shooting one of my Pentax 50 millimeter lenses.
Well, that's cool.
And she prefers it that way than the autofocus.
Right.
So, but she has a K1000 and then she's got a Sony A7. Awesome. And I mean, she's into photography in as much as a 12-year-old can be into photography.
Sure.
Right. So, but she enjoys it in pockets, but I lost her at pinhole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That first exposure was like, all right.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, I mean, can't ever tell. She might,
she'll come back around.
She might come to the dark side, you know.
That's right.
The pinhole side. Cool. All right. Well, I know it's ironic that you're on this show now, Mark, because the last show you were on, we're not going to talk about this very long, but I know that Fuji had totally, you know, did away, you know, with Acros, but now they announced that they're coming back with the new 2 version.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about that? What, you guys never really shot it, though, did you?
I've never shot it, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I shot it plenty, yeah.
Yeah.
I was really a big fan.
What was the ISO on that film?
100.
Okay. That's pretty good, but, you know, it's no Pan F, but, you know.
No. Well, I pulled it to 50 a lot.
Okay.
You know, just to kind of slow it down a little bit, if I needed more time, you know, or whatever, but 50 and 100 does not really, you know, there's not really that much difference between those two.
And you kind of have to. I mean, Texas is probably just as bright as Carolinas. Sure, and yeah. I was shooting at the zoo. I think I've got T-Max 100 in there, and I didn't even consider pulling it because I really probably should have shot it at 50. Because you only have like a few seconds before your exposure's done.
Yeah. Yeah, that yeah, totally. I mean,
depending on the camera, sometimes it's half a second. I'm thinking, oh God, how do I time that?
Yeah,
you don't. You know what I do? I with the realities, if I'm going out shooting and I know it's going to be bright like that, I will use my 6x6 reality Sosoto camera. And I don't even meter anymore, you know, like I pinch it and open the shutter with my finger over it. Then just move my hand as fast as I can, my finger as fast as I can, and put it right back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I do, and just hope for the best, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or not even just take pictures. I mean, it sounds really bad to say that, but when you go outside, yeah, and you meter it, and it says a 20th of a second, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you know, kind of like, what do you do then? You just pray for clouds, I guess. Or...
And it's really hard because, you know, one of the beautiful things that I love about the pinhole photography is it's capturing time. Because it's capturing time and movement, and I love when things are moving in a photo. I love having those anchor objects, and then the rest of the stuff is moving.
Sure,
and me too. You can't get that if you with mm-hmm. less than a second, it'll just look like a blurry image at that point. Yeah. But I want some yep. serious streaking and movement. So
yeah, I do too. I don't really. I know a lot of folks who do pinhole are really into scenes where they have such a long exposure that they completely remove all movement and all people and cars and bicycles and dogs, you know, and everything's gone. And it's just the street. I don't normally go to that extreme, I guess is a good way of putting it. You know, I like to keep that movement in there. Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. I love ghosts in my photos. I really want to be able to see them.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with you on that one. Well, yeah, so that means Fuji is going to grace us with it again, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of a day late, a dollar short for me. I will get some to shoot, you know, of course. But I really have kind of moved on to Ilford, and I'm glad I did because I enjoy everything that Ilford offers just as much, if not more, you know. So
I'm not pleased with the way they handled it.
Yeah. I'll chime in for Andrew and say, this is Andrew. Yeah, I like shooting Ilford too. So there you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the salt print star part of the show?
Yeah, we'll kick it off right now.
Okay.
I don't know. I think Andrew shot some. I can't honestly remember if he wasn't a diehard fan, but I think he had shot it before, you know? But yeah, so I don't know.
I feel bad for the people who just hoarded it and really overpaid.
Well, that's funny you should say that, because I wanted to get one of James Guerin's 4x5s, the reality 4x5s that he makes, because mm-hmm. they're made out of oak. It's just really nice. I was like, well, I really want one, you know. So I sold all of my stock of the Fuji, and I made enough to buy that camera just a few months ago, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of glad I did now, because now that they're re-releasing it, everyone who has all these stocks of it, you know, or I don't know, the price is going to drop like a brick. You know what I mean? As soon as the market gets flooded again, you'll be
right
selling it unless they jack the price up, you know, to $35 a 5-pack. If they do that, I'm not going to buy it at all. If they do that, I'm not even going to mess with it. I won't even buy it anymore.
I would imagine it's going to be pricey. I mean, yeah. That's just the way Fuji's going.
Yeah, definitely.
If I read this really actually good article about the differences between Fuji and the differences in Kodak, and you know where Kodak actually essentially bet their entire farm just on their film business, Fuji's actually outsourced a lot of their other technologies, and you know, like big screen TVs and medical imaging and different things like that. So actually film and photography is a really small part of their business.
Right.
And so I can understand why they're not, you know, if they lose a film or that doesn't really concern them nearly as much, because if you think, you know, if they have a patent that's in all the flat screen TVs out there, then they're pretty happy. You know,
right? Yeah, that's true. I don't know. That's an ongoing debate with everyone about, not everyone, but just in general about, you know, support them or not support them. Or,
well, this is a strange time. I would have never predicted this in film photography. I mean, 10 years ago, if you would have said, hey, we're going to lose a lot of films in the next 10 years, I'd say, well, you know, and when that's done, then I'm going to be walking around with an empty camera, just pointing it at things and clicking a button.
Yeah, right.
But for every film nowadays, it seems that we lose. Strangely enough, we're getting another one somewhere else.
Something pops up, yeah.
You know, whether it's a Sin Still film or whether it's whatever that Russian stuff is, or, you know, somebody's. I realize a lot of these are the same films just being repackaged, but the fact that somebody keeps doing it and bringing them to market is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yep, I think so too. And I think out of all the companies, I think Ilford is probably the guys that are probably going to be in it the longest, maybe.
Well, they're scaled correctly.
Yeah, you know, I feel like they're going to be able to handle the ups and downs. Yeah, the scale, you know, yeah, totally, you're right, Mark, you know, for the market. And who knows? I mean, I kind of feel like the whole film photography business right now, or industry, is kind of in that real estate bubble, you know what I mean? And like, is it going to like, you know, pop and then just completely drop one day, you know? I don't think it is. It's still clicking along enough to keep it going. So I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see, you know?
Well, the one thing I probably did predict probably about 10 years ago was I thought that film photography was going to become more of an art medium, and that, you know, it's going to be up to the artists to actually embrace it and start using it. And thusly, you know, that was going to be the thing that made it live. And yeah, you have to right size it for your smaller clientele. You know, you can't be Eastman Kodak with, you know, billions of dollars of assets that, you know, you're only making $1 million a year or so, you know, to maintain. And so I think the thing that's all in our favor is the Kodak retirement program, I believe, is what's holding or actually producing the film now. And those retirees definitely want to be able to retire. So thusly, they keep the film production going.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And then you have companies like the one you mentioned, CineStill, which I don't know if you guys listened to Mike Guterman's show, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast. But his co-host, Andre, you know, he works for CineStill out in California. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's really, it's, I'm trying to get some to try. And he's like, it's coming, you know, they're really small, and they make, you know, they handle things in small batches. And when they sell out, you know, it's kind of just a little bit of a wait for them to like get it repackaged and get it, you know, cut it off the master roll and do everything for it, you know?
Well, on the color stuff, they're removing the rim.
The remjet. Yeah, that's right. Yep. So I don't know if they're doing that out in California. I mean, he says that they have to go to New York to do, or Rochester, New York. So I don't know if they're doing it out there or what's going on. But yeah, so they're removing the remjet, the ramjet
layer.
I haven't gotten into that Kodak double X stuff. You know what is it?
BW double X.
Yeah, and the 2550 or something. I can't remember what it was called.
It's beautiful film.
Yeah. Well, I shot one roll of it with there was on the Negative Positives podcast, they had a contest, you know, in a tag team shoot of Palapalooza extravaganza. And they did like, you know, the multiple exposures, one roll. And then it got mailed to me, and then I shot on it and developed it, you know, and that's what it was that Kodak. Yeah, it was great. It was awesome film, but I don't have any experience with, you know, like getting the rim jet off the back of it. I know it sounds like quite a feat though, because people are always talking about it, you know, and having to do this. And so
I don't think it's an issue with the black and white. I think it's just the color.
It's just the color, right? Yeah. So this is a shout out to Andre.
Mm-hmm.
Hurry up and get some film on the shelves because I want some.
I think I've only shot a couple of rolls of this CineStill myself. And, you know, I don't know that I've had any. It might be too small of a sample for me to figure out whether or not I actually liked it or not. I don't think I got the results I was expecting. Or maybe, you know, because I always considered that film was, you needed to have the right lighting, just, you know, maybe it's like a studio type film or something like that. Or, right. And of course, I'm more of a walking around street-ish type photographer. You know, I shoot whatever, you know, hits my fancy. And it's like, I don't have the right lighting most of the time. And I don't think my results came out the way I was expecting to on that film.
I think it's a, I think for me, it's, you know, you can develop at C41, but it's definitely a different, it's designed for a different process.
Yeah. That's what I read too.
So I find it difficult to scan and get the colors correct. Really?
Wow.
Yeah. And I've been wanting to try it, but actually send it off to a lab that can do the correct process.
It's D40 or so. I can't remember what it was. It's something else.
I think it's like ECN.
Yeah,
something,
that's what it is. ECN. Yeah.
Yeah. But it, and I think if you do it in that one, that way, like the colors are just more accurate.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I tell you what, I want to talk about, or let's talk about, some accounts that we like, some photographers. I found, I've been following on Instagram Bianca Conwell at Bianca Conwell, and she has a picture of an 8x10 that she contact printed. That is insane. The very, very first picture. It's like a little waterfall.
And I think the first shot in her list there?
Yeah, the first shot in her list, yep.
That's very nice.
And I asked her about this, and she...
Pinhole Cannon said, great shot.
Yeah,
that looks so like a beautiful spot. Oh, that's you. Oh, that's
right. Me, yeah. That guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Exactly.
And, of course, I go right into the... Did you use a paper negative or film? and she said she used film, and so she's shooting 8x10 film. And then doing contact prints with it. And that's pretty good for a contact print. I was like, wow, it almost looks like a view camera picture, you know, but then you can look at the trees and up in the highlights and tell that they're moving a little bit, you know? But she does, these other ones. I always get confused about the different, she does embryo types.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, and of course, when it comes to a wet plate photography, I took this lovely little class. The difference is one is on glass and one is on like metal. Tin.
Right.
So your standard tin type, you know, that's what they're on metal, obviously. The embryo type, essentially, you're making a glass negative, which I found to be quite advantageous, especially when it comes time to produce other photos or to scan it or something like that, because then you can actually adjust the light better. Whereas, you know, once you've created the tin type, the only thing you can do is kind of Photoshop fix it. So
Michael, which one do you think is easier to get into for somebody who's starting?
They're both the same process. Like I said, the only difference is one's on glass and one's on metal.
Right. But what I meant was, which alternative process is the best one, the easiest one to try to get used to? The collodion.
That's the one that I did. The collodion or collodion, however it is.
Right.
It's a pretty simple process. You know, it's an ether based chemical, and then you dunk it into silver nitrate. You essentially have as long as the ether to make your exposure, because once that dries up, it's no bueno anymore. And it doesn't matter whether it's on tin or whether it's on metal. The processes are only like slightly different. You like make small adjustments as far as the development and exposure.
Right.
But I, you know, there's one picture that somebody took of me during the class that they did on glass, which was probably my favorite of the entire class, because I could actually bring it home and I got a much better results from scanning it than I did anything else.
So you're still dealing with cyanide?
Well, no, I didn't get into the cyanide part of it because we just used Ilford Rapid Fixer, which did just as good a job as the cyanide did. Now, I've been told that you get better results using cyanide, but I didn't really feel like I wanted to go that route.
Yeah, that's kind of like what's holding me back. But I like these ones she's doing with the embryo types.
Yeah. So the original, the collodion it's with the ether, the collodion is cancerous.
Ooh.
The silver nitrate will stain your skin. So, and those are the worst two things right there. However, when you get to the cyanide, if you have an open cut, you're going to be dead. So let's just set that one aside. So, you know what? Rapid Fixer works for me.
Yeah. So
way to sell it, Michael. Way to sell it.
You know, it's going to take a while for the cancer to finally catch up to me, but that's cyanide, you know, that's
cyanide. Something about that whole instant stuff. It just,
well, hey, give a shout out to another podcast. I was listening to the Stuff You Should Know podcast, and they were talking about the Tylenol killings.
I listened to that back in the 80s. I listened to that too, man. I listened to it just a couple days ago.
And then when I heard that it was actually cyanide, I'm like, that's another reason not to use it.
Yep, that's crazy, isn't it? And it's crazy to think that before that incident, what was it, 1982?
Yeah.
There was no tamper resistant packaging. You know what I mean? Like there was nothing
on anything.
On anything. Yeah.
You could open a jar of peanut butter in the grocery store and you would have opened it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's pretty crazy. That I listened to that podcast a lot too. I like that podcast. It's pretty good.
Yeah, they should really do one on pinhole photography.
Yeah, they should, and they should invite me.
Yeah, I noticed they don't have any guests though. But I did listen to their episode on JFK, and I'm like, nope, that's wrong. Nope, that's wrong. So it's really best if they talk about stuff I don't know about.
Yeah, sure.
Because then I don't know whether they're wrong or not.
Cool. So, Bianca, good job on your photos. I really enjoy them.
Yeah, it's a nice collection here.
Yeah. Yep. And Michael, you have a. Somebody that you follow that's a creepy clown?
No, that's Mark.
That's Mark.
I believe we're both following him, but.
What was his name?
The account name for him is Mono Bod.
Mono.
B-O-D. Bod.
Mm-hmm. B-O-D. One mm-hmm. Bod?
That's, I guess. But his account, he does, certainly a lot of different kinds of photography. I guess first we should warn people. His avatar picture is a really scary clown.
That's a scary clown. And his head is kind of turned at a weird angle. You know, it's almost creepy. Like he's an inquisitive, scary little clown.
That's right. He's definitely creepy. But I've interacted with him on Twitter, and. It's always been like a really positive interaction, and he does a lot of different things, but he's got an Ondu pinhole. He's got like a great motion shot. Looks like he's on a kind of a merry-go-round, and he's got probably his kid, and it's spinning around, but mm-hmm. it's it's fuzzy. It's got a great sense of movement.
All of his shots do.
He frames really well.
He does. So,
mm-hmm. I don't know if he's doing that in post or he's just kind of got it down. You know, he's got this one of a boat that's sort of resting, you know, on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just framed that up really nicely.
Yeah.
So that's a great account. Go ahead.
He does the same thing, too, in terms of some pictures. He is like, outrageously close. And then some you can tell that he. It's kind of step back a little bit, you know, so he's kind of doing like what you guys are talking about, kind of a little bit of everything. He might be a good guest.
I think so. Yeah. And you can ask him about this creepy clown business. That's scaring the kids.
That's actually Andrew when he comes home from the pub, you know, he gets dressed up and goes out and scares all the little kids in his village or town. If he's not here, I'm just throwing him under the bus, you know.
Absolutely.
Well deserved.
See, and if you go down far enough in his list, he's got a cyanotype. So, I don't know, you go down far enough, he might be in the salt printing.
Oh, there you go.
Yep, cyanotype. So you go down a little farther there, he's got some different stuff in there. That's what I like. It's really hard to find just dedicated pinhole photographers, but you normally will find them if they're into a lot of other alternative processes.
That's where I'm at right now. Pretty much. I'm only doing pinhole stuff. I have my, shoot the whole good stuff here and there, but
You go down a little further, and it looks like he's doing red scale. Yep.
Yeah, I've tried the red scale once. It's not for me. Do you guys like shooting the red scale? First off, if you do shoot red scale, are you purchasing it or are you re-spooling it yourself?
I've done both. Yeah. I bought some Lomography red scale, and then I'll take a expired color film and just re-spool it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, out in Texas, if you kind of get on backcountry roads and you find abandoned structures or silos, grain mills, stuff like that, and especially with all the sun we have, red scale does really well.
And you hear banjos in the background?
Yeah, banjos in the background.
Shoot faster, I hear banjos.
Go.
No. Don't turn the car off. Don't turn it off.
So have you, I'm assuming most people are only doing this with 35 millimeter, doing the red scale. Because if you did it with 120, you'd have to like completely take the piece, flip it over.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think you can purchase Lomography in 120.
Yeah.
But I love the look of red scale. I enjoy doing that.
I've only like shot one roll and purchased that one. I mean, it was nice results. I think I needed more light to have gotten some more contrast, but
right.
It was kind of I believe it was one of our winter photo shoots, so It really wasn't super sunny.
Right. No, it needs full sun. You know, you need to give it a lot of light.
Yeah, and see, I'm looking at this picture that he did, the monobod of the motorcycle with the Ferris wheel behind it. And it looks almost like a regular camera. If you come down just a couple frames down from the very top.
I didn't notice it was a Ferris wheel until you mentioned it. I mean, I was like, yeah, it was a nice looking bike. So, oh, that is a Ferris wheel.
But it's like, it looks like, I don't know. It doesn't even look like a pinhole. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, no, it does. It's got its subtleness. But, you know, what is he shooting with? Is it a noonday pinhole? I mean, that's probably a pretty sharp pinhole.
It's got to be. I don't think he doesn't seem like the guy that's pushing the sharpening slider all the way to the, banging it to the far right, you know?
I mean, I know my Holga and my Ondu pinholes take super sharp photos, but those are all laser cut pinholes compared to the the push pin and the emery paper that I use for everything else.
Huh. Crazy.
It's a good account, but like Mark says, when the creepy clown comes up, you always take notice. Say, what's this? How did this happen? Oh, it's he's talking to me now.
I know, right? He's in my head.
Oh, he's a good guy. So, you know, back and forth on Twitter for a few things here and there, but it's still, when that comes up, it's like it does draw your attention.
Right.
He'll squeal like Homer Simpson. Yeah. You've been warned.
He's been warned. He's there. He's looking at you. So, Michael, what's yours? Didn't you have the...
I found one, and it's Alicia's Pinhole, A-L-I-C-I-A-S Pinhole on Instagram. And she does some close-up stuff here as well. Her first shot there of her fingernails being polished, it reminds me of Justin Quinnell. And
okay, hang on. I got the wrong Alicia's Pinhole. Hang on.
A-L-I-C-I-A-S Pinhole. On Instagram. Alicia Pinhole.
Alicia.
She doesn't have very many things on here, but it's a nice little variety of...
There it is. Okay, cool.
...of stuff. She's got some different views. She's got some close-ups.
I like your fingernails.
Looks like she's shooting some instant film as well, so that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I like the beach shot.
She's shooting mostly color, which I need to shoot more color. Because I think I've just got so much of my stuff is black and white. I need to shoot more color.
Are you gonna do color negative film or do like, you know, slide film?
Is there a benefit to shooting Clyde film?
I mean, other than it just being a positive, you know, I mean, it looks like a little picture when you get it, you know what I mean? The colors, they say, are a little bit better. But, I mean, not much, you know.
The last slide film I shot was Kodachrome. And, well, you know, those looked okay, but I only shot it because it was going out pretty quickly. So I, like, grabbed a couple rolls and shot it real quick before. I can say I did. I wish I'd had more time with something like that, and, you know, shot a lot more different stuff.
Sure. I mean, I think the colors are better for sure than they are on color print film, you know?
Okay.
And it doesn't quite have the latitude as the slides don't have the latitude that the color print film has, you know, the color negative. So that's about it.
Shadow depth does it have, or which one's better?
Good question. It depends on where what you're shooting, you know. I know you got to watch it with the side film because it'll block up and you'll lose your detail and your shadows quick.
Yeah,
compared to the color print film, I don't know exactly the stop latitude of it. You know, I know the slide film only has about a half a stop latitude for over and under exposure. You know, you got to be like right on or it doesn't work. You know, Mark.
Help me out, Mark.
Come on, man. I'm trying.
I've done both. I like the look with a slide film, but you probably get away with more if you shoot, you know, C41, especially if you do, like I've done Portra and you can do some, it's just softer color wise. So it's easier to manipulate in Lightroom once you scan it and get it to the way you want it to look.
Right. Yeah, I know that's the only, one of the only problems for me was that I can't print color. So I was, you know, that's why I pretty much was doing black and white, but now that I can't, I don't have a darkroom anymore, so I'm back to shooting black and white. But you can just scan it and have it printed, you know, Shutterfly or whatever.
We took advantage of that Canon rebate
A
while back from B&H.
Right.
And so we got one of those Canon, which one do I have? The 100, I think.
It does good?
Oh, yeah. It does well. It prints real nicely. Just, it's a lot of real estate. But it's the Pro 100 is the one I got.
What are you doing? Like, what's the biggest it can do? Like 11 by 14?
13 by 19.
Gotcha. Yep. Sounds about right. And, you know, and I've got a similar model. I've got the Pro 10 model. Same size of paper. So when you're doing 16 by 20, actually 12 by 16 is like the perfect size anyways, because that's going to fit in a 16 by 20 frame with a 2-inch border. So,
right. So that works out good.
It's a very good size.
Yeah. I don't have much experience with the home printing thing. I really haven't done it as far as using an inkjet printer, you know, or printing at all color, you know, with any type of printer, honestly. I'm horrible at that. But that's why I have people who know a lot about it, like you guys.
Yeah, well, it does take, and Mark's got more experience than I do, but it does take some getting used to it and some adjusting. And, you know, you can't, you know, the way you're going to make stuff look nice in Instagram is not how you want it to be output for printing at all, because they will come out horrible.
Yeah, you're not just pulling that thing out of the box and plugging it in and making gallery prints. You're going to waste some paper and a little bit of ink.
Definitely so.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of experimentation, but I don't know. On my Mac, I think I had the contrast set pretty well to begin with. And so, I mean, it didn't take much to start putting out some prints that looked good. Obviously, it's not going to look like what you see on your screen because that's backlit.
Hold on, guys. That's my alarm system just went off.
Uh-oh.
We have neighbors actually trying to either enter or leave their own home.
He's just letting you know.
Exactly. He wants me to know these things. He's a great watchdog. He only works during business hours, and he is officially done at 8:30 every night. So,
yeah, that's funny. Clocking out now.
Well, he's high strung because in about 30 minutes it's dinner time, so he's on high alert. He doesn't want to miss dinner.
He doesn't want to miss dinner.
Understandable.
I'm still here. Don't forget to feed me.
At this point, it's like it's too close to dinner. Everything, you know, if a mouse farts, he's going to go off. So
right.
Yeah. And then, like 5 minutes after dinner, he's napping.
Yeah. What a life. Life of a dog. Cool. All right. Well, guys, I think it's great to talk to both of you again, especially Mark. It's been a year, so.
Yeah, it's been quite a while.
It's been forever since we talked.
Yeah. Michael, I don't remember the last time I talked to you.
I don't remember either. But I'm going to do you the favor of reminding you. Do you have to thank anybody for coffee?
I do. I was actually going to get to that.
All right. Go for it.
We have only one person. I've got to find it. Cameron Young was on the show last week.
Yeah, it was a good show. I was listening to that one about his underwater photography.
And he donated to us, so thank you, Cam. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Mark, you don't feel guilty about donating just because you're on the show.
Yeah, you don't have to.
I am lost. What kind of donating are we talking about?
Well, we started a coffee account, which is basically, you know, like, hey, if you like what we're doing, buy us a coffee, you know.
Oh, okay.
And we only did that because we want to make up some merchandise and some things coming up in the future. So, you know, that whatever's donated is going to be going towards stuff that's going to be, you know, distributed back to listeners and contests and fun stuff, you know. Looking up the prices to get stuff made is it's not ungodly expensive, but it's not cheap either, you know. And we just figured after we've been here a year, so we figured we'd set one up.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you feel like it, you want to kick us a couple bucks or pounds or bones or clams or whatever you call them.
Simoleons.
Simoleons. Yeah. you can check us out at coffee at KOFI, / the Lenses Podcast.
Okay. I'll look at that.
Follow the link. Yeah. I'll have the link I'll throw it in the show notes too.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And we're getting we got stickers and we're going to get all kinds of stuff done.
Nice. Why aren't we doing that, Michael?
I don't know. I hate to correct the host on his own show, but it's KO-FI.
Oh yeah.
com. You got to put in that hyphen or you will not find it.
Thank you.
Well, Mark, we certainly could do that. You know, whenever we get around to it.
Yeah. We've had, you know, lots of listeners have contributed, you know, so whenever we get stuff made up and product packs and everything situated after we get stuff ordered and made, you know, we'll be definitely sending those donators first pick of whatever comes up, you know. So just to say thanks. So, yeah.
Very cool.
And I'll say this, only if it was Andrew's idea, I'll give him the credit for that, you know, because he brought it up, so. There you go, Andrew. Thank you, Andrew.
So the first pint goes to Andrew.
The first pint goes to Andrew, yep. Yep, that's right. So if you guys want to let everybody know where they can track you down or find you guys?
Not really. Tracking me down, go finding for it, me.
I don't blame you either. We have some questionable listeners. Especially if they're all like Andrew, you know.
Yeah, I do like going shooting with Mark. And Mark, did you sell that? You sold your Yashica, didn't you?
My Yashica, the
TLR.
TLR, yes, I did.
Yeah, that was a shame because I could go on a photo walk with Mark, and it's almost like we were at the beach here recently, and I got a Labrador and I got a poodle. And while we're out walking the dogs on the beach, everybody's like, "Oh, look at the poodle!" Mind you, it's like nobody said anything about the Labrador. Well, the same thing with Mark. If the two of us are out shooting and he has a TLR, everybody's like, "Oh, that's such an awesome camera!" And I'm like, "What am I, chop suey over here? Come on now!
I have a Holga.
I've got a film camera too." No, doesn't matter. Does not matter at all.
Well, I can bring a Rolleiflex. How about that?
You see, yeah, there you go. His wife's Rolleiflex.
So supposedly one of the ones she's bought is for me.
Supposedly?
Supposedly. Supposedly.
She keeps telling me that she bought it for me.
Uh-huh. That's right. She keeps saying that. And I don't remember that conversation. It's like, oh, I got this for you, but you said you didn't want it. I'm like, what are you talking about?
She's mm-hmm. like, oh, I got this for you. And she's looking at it as she's walking away, so holding it.
That's right.
And every night she puts it under her pillow. And, yeah. You know, it's...
That's funny.
But yeah, oh, if you need me to bring out the TLR, I can do that.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
No,
I have a TLR. I don't shoot with it very often. Well, cool. If you want to find me, you can obviously find me at on Twitter or Instagram as Mr. Holga.
Yeah.
And I am Mark_snaps on Twitter and Instagram.
And Mark's wife, Laura, has a podcast called Film Photo Geeks that are she's only doing it twice a month now? Once a month? Twice a month?
Kind of depends on their schedules.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, they try to get together once a month. And then I got to... You know, listen to her edit it.
Right. Oh, listen to it three times.
Three. That's generous.
She's
fastidious about editing.
Oh yeah, I am too.
Yes, I can tell. Your anchor editing.
Yeah.
No, she goes through and like really cleans it up. But yeah, the podcast is Film Photo Geeks. Her account is Laura Takes Pics with an X. Mm-hmm. And then Michael and I are Dallas Photo Walk. We actually have a walk next Friday night.
We do. Cool. I'm probably going to be shooting Pinhole before the walk. So
yeah. Me too.
Because, you know, I work in downtown anyways. And so I'm probably just going to park early and walk around, take some photos, and I'll be done pinholing before the walk actually begins. So it's always nice to do that.
Yep.
So if you're in or near Dallas, check them out and have a walk with them.
Exactly. It's going to be damn hot.
I mean, it's going to be really hot, probably. Mm. Do it at night. But if you want to get in contact with me, you can find me on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon. And
what's your Twitter handle?
Mr. Invisible. No, I'm sorry. My Twitter handle is Warboy Snapper.
No, there you go.
Underscore Pinhole. And then we have a Facebook group, the Lensless Facebook group is Lensless Podcast, but you can find us on the Facebook group. And if I don't mention Flickr, Andrew will get mad at me. So we have a Flickr account too, with a good group. They're putting up lots of good pinhole stuff. But the Facebook group is more, you know,
it's really pretty interactive.
Yeah. So questions, if you have questions, go there. Or if you want to post a picture for feedback, you know, everybody's pretty positive, you know, about what's going on and what everyone's shooting. So come hang out and show us some of your pictures. Right. All right, guys. Well, I guess that's it. So we can talk to everybody later.
Hey, sounds good. Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah,
thanks for
coming on. All right.
Bye now.
All right. Later, bye.
What?
What did I do?
Your picture.
Which one?
On this app.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. That's a birthday picture. What are you talking about? That's a good one.
Looks like you're picking your nose.
I know.
Not quite.
I have no septum. I'm just running my finger all the way up my nose.
I was going to say all the way deep to the knuckle, right?
Knuckle deep, my friends.